Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. Today's Baseball America Podcast is sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America Podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. Now it's time to talk baseball.
And with that, it is the Baseball America College Podcast. Thanks to Dave Slade for recording that intro for us. Great voice. You can tell that guy does radio and PA for a living, and I don't. But we do cover college baseball in a large part for a living, and that's why we have our Monday College Baseball Roundtable. I'm John Manuel with Ted Cahill, Jim Schoeder, and Mike Lana from left to right on your radio dial. But we do have plenty of college baseball to talk about. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. We'll talk to you a little bit about SeatGeek as well. But guys, we want to start off at the top. You know, we have not had to discuss this before this week, Teddy. We have not had to discuss what's wrong with Florida. I'm not even sure anything's wrong with Florida, but they did actually lose a series this weekend. And I guess it happened kind of a variety of ways. But in essence, Kentucky outpitched Florida this weekend a little bit and got to the Gators pitching staff, you know, not for huge totals, but able to hold Florida's offense in check and then able to come back on Sunday from a deficit and win the series.
Yeah, Kentucky only scored 17 runs on the weekend, but that was just enough. The Saturday game, they got to Puck. He wasn't at his best again on Saturday. And then on Friday, or on Sunday then, in the final, Florida goes up 3-0 in the second inning, and you kind of thought that might be it. You know, with the way Fado had been pitching and the Gators bullpen, 3 runs is often enough for them, but it wasn't. Kentucky chipped away at it. Kyle Cody kept it tight, kept them in the game, allowed them to chip away at it. And they did it against the Gators bullpen, really. I mean, Fado gave up a couple, but they scored against Sean Anderson. They scored against Dane Dunning. These are guys that are very difficult to do it against, and they get to extra innings, and Florida goes ahead again. Kentucky gives them 5 outs in the top of the 10th with a couple of errors, and Florida pushes a run across. But then against Dunning, Kentucky gets the 2 runs it needs in the bottom of the 10th and walks it off when Brady Sinner threw a wild pitch with the bases loaded.
It's not like Florida played poorly, but they were a little sloppy. They weren't their best. Do you see long-term ramifications of this for Florida? Any warning signs? I mean, obviously, we kind of thought A.J. Puck was rounding into form after last weekend. Anything concerning for you long-term about the Gators losing this series? I mean, they've lost to Florida, to Kentucky, four years in a row?
This is the fourth straight year they lost to Kentucky. I don't see any long-term real concerns here. This is the first time they left the state of Florida, which is not insignificant that they had played everything in the Sunshine State before this. They played a really tough road series at Miami, but it is a little bit different once you get into conference play and have to go on the road. Teams lose series.
Right.
That's the thing. You know,
there's no perfect machine out there, not in college baseball.
Exactly. And Kentucky can pitch. We knew that coming into the year. And so it's not a huge surprise. I mean, you would like to see a little bit more from the Gators offense, I think, just in general. But, you know, they're young, and I'm still confident they'll get it together. And, you know, the pitching stuff is kind of blippy. If you're Florida, I think you expect to score more than 4 runs on a Sunday.
Right.
Kyle Cody's one of the best Sunday starters in college baseball when he's on. And he was on, or at least reasonably.
He was on enough, yeah.
So, yeah, it's disconcerting on some level just because of what they have coming, but at the same time, Florida is still Florida.
It feels to me, Jim and Mike, you know, whoever wants to jump in, it feels like this was a game Sunday that Kyle Cody last year especially would have lost. He would have given up some of those base runners. He wasn't getting a lot of swings and misses. It seems like this would have been one of those games that he would have buckled in, but I don't know if maybe it's just the experience of being a senior. He does sound like he's been better this year, talking to a scout about him during NHSI this past week. It does seem like he's been better this year. It's not like he's taken a quantum leap forward, but the scout I talked to, I just was comparing and contrasting him with Kyle Funkhauser, and it's like, well, he's been better than Funkhauser. The subject of our preseason story that you did, Mike, really feels like Kentucky is this was like a classic Kentucky. Every year they're kind of a tease, Jim, where they show you this, where they can beat good teams. Yeah. Is this more sustainable? And what do you guys think? What lessons do you guys take spinning this forward for Kentucky?
Certainly it's a huge series win. I mean, but kind of like you said, we've seen this before where they'll get off to some crazy hot start and not sustain it. Last year, this is a big win for them trying to get back to the tournament. They missed out last year, so they've got that marquee win now. But, I mean, yeah, we had them in the preseason top 25, so we know they're talented. You know, we know they've got arms. If they can sustain it, kind of like we were saying, there's a chance they have the talent to get back. And, we'll kind of like to see what they can do on the road. Winning 2 out of 3 at home, I mean, it's not... Since it's Florida, it's not one of those deals where you say what we expected them to, but it is. At some point, let's see what they can do on the road. That's going to be always out there.
Yeah, Mike, they're at Tennessee this coming weekend, which is a pretty offensive ball club. They still have to go to Vanderbilt on the road, but otherwise, it feels like they have some of their other better series. And South Carolina comes in, they'll have to go to Ole Miss later on, but it seems like it's a sustainable schedule. For Kentucky, it's an SEC schedule, so it's tough. But it feels like they can use it as a springboard looking forward.
Yeah, I would say so. And you do mention Kyle Cody, and he's been better in flashes this year. But still, the overall numbers, 2-1, 6.43, and still too many walks out of him. I think really the key for them going forward is his consistency and Zach Brown, too.
Right. These are the two guys we kind of thought would be... Right. The stalwarts of their rotation, being better than Kyle Funkhauser is faint praise. That's faint praise from this guy. I didn't think about it in that context, but Kyle, because both Kyles have had their struggles this year.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Cody, I mean, just last weekend, he struggled. He had a big lead, and I think he was knocked out in the fourth inning of that start. Yeah, by Georgia. So, both of them have been, we thought those two guys, I mean, they have probably the best raw stuff on that pitching staff, but really Dustin Beggs, another senior in that rotation, has been the savior for Kentucky so far. He's 6-0.
Hard to believe.
First time in program history, I think someone's gone 6-0 for them, and, 2.40. I mean, a guy who was drafted and came back too. He doesn't light up the radar gun as much as Brown and Cody might, but he's still a solid veteran pitcher, and, they just need Brown and Cody to be the guys that they were hoping they would be before the season, I think, going forward. That's really the key for Kentucky.
Yeah.
When you're looking at Kentucky's ability to keep this going, it's notable that they have now won two SEC series when they lost on Friday night. And you lose on Friday night, and that puts you in a really tough spot. And so they really need Brown to get it going, because that is not sustainable. That is the part of this that is not sustainable, that Beggs has been incredible, and when I talked to Coach Gary Henderson last night, he talked about how important Beggs has been for that team, and just being able to get them into a position where they can win a series on a Sunday. But they need to get Brown going even more than they need to get Cody going. Henderson said that when Cody needed to last night, he made the pitches, and that's really what they need him to do.
Right.
Obviously, you'd like him to be a little better, but I think Brown is the bigger concern, because you have to win on Friday nights in conference play.
That is just very hard to do, to keep on winning series when you don't win on Friday. And Kentucky has done it twice, once on the road. They're 4-2 in the league, tied with Vanderbilt and Florida in the SEC East for second place. South Carolina is another SEC team that's in first in the SEC East. We'll get to them in a second. Just to wrap this up on Florida, the Gators take on Texas A&M, the new number one. Obviously, the Aggies, well, they're 21-3 overall. They win a series against LSU this weekend, which we'll talk about LSU, I guess, in a minute. But really the biggest test for A&M, they had played Yale, Pepperdine, Hofstra, Fresno State, not the greatest schedule, and Auburn, not the greatest schedule leading up to this weekend. Really their biggest test, guys, and they passed it this weekend against LSU, mostly on the mound. They gave up 4 runs in 3 games. Is that how big of a who's the early favorite in that, Teddy, in this Gators Aggies week? I'm even though A&M is the number one right now, I'm going to guess that Florida's your favorite.
Yeah, that would be correct. I mean, it's tough to go on the road in the SEC, period, and I think the Gators are the more talented team. They're they have the weekend loss, and that's why the Aggies are ahead of them. Is that they're 6-0 on weekends, and Florida does have the series loss, but You know, when Florida gets back into Gainesville, I mean, it's really tough to beat Florida in Gainesville. But with A&M this weekend, this last weekend against LSU, that was huge for their pitching staff to do what they did, because they were coming off a tough weekend at Auburn where they gave up 27 right. runs to the Tigers. And, you know, so to have that bounce back against LSU where they do only give up the five runs in three games. Yeah, I mean, that's big for that staff. And that's a staff that can pitch. That was a weird weekend at Auburn. When I talked to Rob Childress last week, he said it was a perfect storm of factors that led to them giving up that many runs. But it was still very good for them to have this bounce back in week two of SEC play to show that, you know, that was the aberration.
Yeah, that's, you know, bullpen-wise, too. I mean, like, off the top of my head, I think, well, you know, Florida has this endless bullpen. But Texas A&M feels like a team that can match them, not just with depth, but, I mean, if I wanted one guy to close it out, I mean, I think I'd give a slight edge to A&M there, wouldn't you, with Hendricks?
Yeah, I mean, the Florida bullpen is incredible. Henderson said it was one of the best collections of arms he's ever seen. But A&M's, you know, when I look at the strength of A&M's pitching staff, I look more to the bullpen than their starting. Their starters are good, Ivy, Vines, and Simmons, but when you can have Hendricks and Ecker and guys like that at the back end of A&M's bullpen, I mean, you do feel pretty good about their ability to shorten games. And Hendricks and Ecker both can give you more than one inning if you need. And I mean, so when A&M gets a lead, I mean, you have to feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I have to also like the fact that, you know, Brigham Hill's pitching really well for them out of that bullpen. Like in this flex role, he pitched four scoreless innings this weekend. I don't know much about Brigham Hill. He's from Natchitoches, and I just want to show off that I know how to pronounce Natchitoches. That was my main point of bringing that up, was that he's from Natchitoches.
You mean it's not Nacogdoches?
No, apparently it's Natchitoches. I learned this. I think Lance Berkman's originally from Natchitoches. There was a player back in my old days who's from there, and that's who learned me on that pronunciation. Maybe I'll make you guys go on the spot, but Teddy's already given his favorite. Mike, Jim, you guys want to weigh in on A&M v. Florida this weekend?
I'll take the Gators, too. I mean, I think maybe getting a little reality check wasn't maybe not the worst thing in the world. And they are at home. It's just hard to go against them there.
You know, it'd be cool if I was the dissenting voice here, but right. I'm not going to be. It's hard for me to pick against the Gators, even though we dropped them to number two. I mean, I think they're the most talented team in the country.
I'm with Jimmer in terms of probably not the worst thing in the world for them to have a loss, to see how, you know, how they react to that. I guess we've seen how South Carolina reacted to losses, guys. They lost 2 out of 3 to Clemson in their first, what we thought was their first test, and in large measure, kind of we thought it was their only test up until SEC play started. They swept Arkansas last week. Teddy, you were there for that. And you know, Mike, you've seen South Carolina in person. Jimber, did you see them or no? I know you were in Myrtle the first weekend.
I have not seen them.
So you're the only one of the three of you who hasn't seen them. I think everybody kind of saw them this weekend. I mean, they go to Ole Miss, which had a tremendous resume to this point. Mm-hmm. Series win at home against Louisville.
Always very good at home, too.
Always good at Swayze and gets swept. And Ole Miss only scores 6 runs the whole weekend. South Carolina's won 13 straight, guys, since that series at Clemson. They are now, what, number 7 in our rankings?
That is correct.
Yes.
It's Kentucky, we didn't mention, is in at 24 this week. South Carolina from 18 to 7, by going on the road and winning that series. What's got into the Gamecocks, and what's so different, and how are they able, Mike, to just be this loud of a series sweep? I mean, series win on the road, and the SEC is hard enough. Sweeping a ranked team on the road like that, I totally did not see that coming.
I think you have to point to their pitching, and I think particularly you have to look at the development of Clark Schmidt this year, just the jump that he's taken from last year to this year in terms of his velocity, his stuff, his command, his poise. I mean, he's been an ace. He's been the ace that they needed and that they missed last year when Will Crow went down.
He's the ace they deserve.
He's the ace. he could be the symbol.
That's right.
South Carolina needs. Yeah. So I think it starts with him. I mean, he's set the tone on the weekends. He's 6-0 now. You know, you can't argue with that. And then you look at right behind him, Braden Webb, you know, the rare draft eligible freshman who's been.
I'm gonna have to get over that, I guess, with Braden Webb, because he's spectacular this year.
He's been
so
great.
Far.
8 innings, 14 strikeouts. this weekend. So
is that good?
It's not bad. Yeah. It's not bad. So I think it starts with the pitching for them. And, you know, they made a change in their weekend rotation, dropping Widener from that Sunday slot and bringing in Adam Hill. And he did a nice job this weekend as well. Six innings of scoreless baseball. You know, you take that on a Sunday.
And what I just think of with South Carolina is that this time last year, you would have thought they would have rolled into an SEC weekend series with Will Crow and Alex Destino on a weekend. I know Destino was more known for his hitting last year than his pitching and has been in college. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought, you know, Will Crow was their ace. Destino was like their big recruit. Those guys are nowhere to be found in their weekend rotation, and they're better than you would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, Mike, you say their pitching is what you point to. I would have definitely said their hitting. But both are going really well for them right now. I mean, the thing is, they have everything going. Mike detailed their pitching, but the hitting this year with John Jones and Destino and Dom Thompson-Williams in the middle of the order, that's really, I mean, they have a presence in the middle of the lineup that pitchers have to deal with. That is a scary part of the lineup when those guys are going, and they are definitely going right now. John Jones can't be pitched to, basically, and Destino has a very long hitting streak, and Dom Thompson-Williams is a dynamic player as well.
Yeah, Destino's hitting 17 straight.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been so much better so far in SEC play, where last year he had the great non-conference start and really kind of hit a wall, and was part of the, that was part of the reason why they didn't get over the hump last season. But this is a team that has, it feels like, more power options than just one or two. Their pitching is, I think, better than anyone expected. Josh Regan's been fantastic out of their bullpen. I did not expect, and he's had good seasons there before. It's like he's been a guy, but he wasn't a guy, a capital G guy. Feels like he is now in that bullpen role. They really feel like they've kind of recalibrated. I mean, like, they came into the year thinking Tyler Widener was going to be a key guy for them. They haven't had to rely on him. It just feels like this has been a matter of a team that last year wasn't able to adjust on the fly. This year, maybe they have a little bit more depth and able to make some of the adjustments, and every button that Chad Holbrook has pushed has worked for them. Again, I'll go back to how sustainable do you guys see this? I mean, 23-2 was not sustainable. But they're in first place in the SEC East. What reason do we have to not believe that's going to continue to be the case?
Yeah, I think they've proven themselves at this point. I mean, I know we were a little skeptical before the Clemson series, just because that non-conference schedule wasn't the most intimidating slate of opponents out there. But I think winning 13 in a row since then, sweeping their first two SEC series, and obviously going on the road against Ole Miss and doing it there. I mean, that's loud. It says a lot about this team. I think they're legit. I don't know if they'll, like you said, if 23-2 is sustainable, but I think, they're certainly a force in the SEC.
I know in college sports, they want you to pay attention to the Final Four this weekend, because that's where the NCAA makes all of its money. But how can you not pay attention to college baseball in the SEC this weekend with Texas A&M at Florida and South Carolina at Vanderbilt? That's ridiculous.
Well, and Ole Miss and Mississippi State, one of the best rivalries in college sports.
Yeah, you're so hyped for it.
I was writing off the bat yesterday because I want to include Mississippi and Mississippi State as a series to watch, or a series that I'm excited for. And I don't remember how this happened, but I started watching hype videos for the Egg Bowl that Ole Miss and Mississippi State put out this fall. And I was ready to run through a wall after after watching those.
I love it. I love the hype videos, college baseball hype videos in March. This is what the sport and a lot of other places is up against. It's up against the attention that the national entity that governs the sport, the NCAA, wants your attention elsewhere. They want your attention in Houston for the men's Final Four. They want it wherever UConn's going to win for the women's Final Four. Speaking of Mississippi State.
Indianapolis.
Speaking of Mississippi State, I believe it was 32-4 into the first quarter. UConn and Mississippi State. I just know because my son was obsessed with that this weekend.
It was like 81-16 or something.
The final score was a 60-point win. Yeah. I think it was 98-38. So
yeah. Was that Michigan State?
No, it was Mississippi State. It was bad. It was the SEC tournament runner-up, is what I remember. I don't know what they call it, Egg Bowl for Mississippi State, Ole Miss women's basketball, but for this weekend, that's going to be a hard ticket to get. And if you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online, you know that most sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge Visa checkout. That's why I need to try SeatGeek, because they've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. SeatGeek's the only place I go to look for tickets to a game or a concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I think you should have it as well. SeatGeek's taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. It's red, yellow, or green. It's very easy. It's not as complicated as the BA. We like to use the 2080 scale. SeatGeek has made it a lot easier. And before you buy, you can use their detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, SeatGeek allows you to find the full ticket price from start to finish and never surprises you with huge fees at checkout. Best of all, Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get that $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add promo code, enter the promo code BA20, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BA20 today. So thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring the Baseball America podcast. I'm John with Teddy and Jim and Michael and Anna. Guys, let's shift to the Pac-12, because the Pac-12 is chaotic. I mean, it is totally unexpected. I can't think of a bigger surprising team on any leaderboard nationally than Utah being tied for first in the Pac-12 somewhere. Former BA intern and Utah alum Bubba Brown is very excited about Utah. Bubba's probably tweeted about it. I missed it. But Utah's 7-13 overall, but 4-2 in the pack. As they beat, what, Arizona and Arizona State back-to-back weeks? Is that who it was?
That was the Ducks.
I'm sorry, it was Oregon last week. Hello. So bouncing Utah, I mean, Oregon from the poll. I mean, Bill Kinneberg for years and years has been known as a pitching guy. That's his shtick. He coached USA college national team. He acknowledged that's his reputation. They go on the road to win series back-to-back with Oregon and Arizona State. Is this bad for the Pac-12 that a team with a 190 RPI is tied for first place in their conference? That would seem bad, because Utah's not going to get an at-large bid. And I'm pretty impressed by Utah. I don't know if it says more for the Pac-12 or for Utah.
Utah, 8-13 at this point in the season, by the way. I don't know that it's a good thing. I think this is just a signal that the Pac-12 is having a down year. Which we kind of thought this was going to be anyway. There's been a lot of turnover in the conference. There's a lot of youth in the conference. And last year was so good, and then a lot of those guys that were key to that are now gone. But that being said, if Utah can be good, I think that's good long-term for the Pac-12, because you want Utah to raise its game. Like, you knew it was going to take a little while for Utah baseball to adjust to playing in the Pac-12, that the football team was you know, a lot closer, that other sports were a lot closer to being competitive than the baseball team would be, just because of the disadvantages of Utah.
Right.
But if Utah can get to be competitive and can consistently be competitive, that's only good for the Pac-12. So if this can lead to that, it's a long-term good thing. In the short term, this year, I think this is a signal of the conference's shortcomings.
There's only two Pac-12 teams in the top 25 right now. We sent UCLA the boot this week, to use an old BA inside joke. UCLA's 4-2 in the league, but which is tied for first. But 12-9 overall, lost a series at Arizona. They've got to go to Cal next weekend. That's not going to be easy, because last I checked, Cal's the team that's doing some things right in this league. Cal's also 4-2. Cal wins the series against Oregon State this weekend. Oregon State was, what, number 3 in our rankings, and drops precipitously. I'll be honest, I had my doubts about Cal. I thought we had Cal too high previously. When you go ahead and you sweep Oregon State, I don't think that anymore. You guys, who was our Cal backer? Who had the most faith in Cal here? Doesn't feel like Cal has really done, they had the series loss at USC, but other than they lost that opening series here to Duke, they didn't look super.
That series is not helping them right now.
It's not.
The way Duke's playing.
It's not. It doesn't help them long term. But Can sweeping, I gotta imagine that sweeping Oregon State is a little bit truer measure.
Yeah, that's gonna carry a lot of weight.
I mean, I think that is big. I mean, I'm willing to give a team a pass, especially on opening weekend after they crossed the country.
Right.
I wasn't at that series, and I kind of wish I was, because I want to know how Duke beat Cal. I mean, I've seen Duke a few times now. It's unfathomable. but, yeah. You know, to get back home this weekend after losing at USC and to sweep Oregon State, I mean, that was huge. And for Dawn Jeffries is incredible.
That's answer number one.
He's so hard to beat on Friday night, and that's why I still think that they're going to be, you know, I still have them in my eight for Omaha, because they're just going to be such a tough out in the postseason with him going. You know, if you get to Super Regionals and you can throw that guy on your first game of Super Regionals, I mean, I know at that point the pitching all around is going to be very good, but I mean, it's just going to be so hard to knock them out in Regionals or in Super Regionals with Jeffries going and then what they can follow him up with.
Dalton Jeffries, is he the best Friday starter in the country for you right now, Teddy? I know he doesn't have the best numbers. If you had to pick one guy to win that Friday start, would it be him?
It might be him.
I think it'd be him for me right now, guys. I mean, I know Brendan McKay is really good at Louisville. I know there are a lot of other good pitchers out there. Would it be Dalton Jeffries? I can't think of anybody better right now.
He'd be up there. Gallen, the way he pitched the first 5 weeks of the season, hit a little bit of
I'd definitely go with Jeffries over that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I was coming into the weekend, Zach Gallen's numbers were exceptional. They're still pretty good.
I was at that start on Thursday night. He did not look like a guy I'd want to throw out in a must-win over Dalton Jeffries.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking right now, to me, Dalton Jeffries is the guy. I'm not saying he's the best pitcher in college baseball. I'm sure there are other guys who have better numbers than him, but you combine stuff, draft, college production, experience, the whole panoply of what makes you a guy, I'm taking Dalton Jeffries.
I think him, Clark Schmidt, and Logan Shore for me would be the guys I would be picking from.
I was going to say Logan Shore too. Yeah.
Logan Shore has that similar combination of command, stuff, experience. You know, he's been in a lot of big games. I think I give Dalton Jeffries a slight edge in terms of stuff. I think he's a little bit better.
Connor Jones is the other guy I was thinking about.
Yeah, he's been good too.
He's in that. But you can't. I don't know if I take any of those guys over Jeffries.
I think Connor Jones he might be the better answer in terms of just pure stuff. He probably has the best stuff out of all these guys we're talking about. So
I don't know if his stuff is that much better than Jeffries. He just has he looks more like a pro because he is. I mean, he has that body doesn't have.
I think he has a little bit more velocity when I've seen him at their best. I've never heard Dalton Jeffries throwing 95 to 97 at his best. His best is like a 94, touch of 5. Connor Jones will touch a 7. Every once in a while, Connor Jones will be a guy with 3-plus pitches. I don't know. Yeah. To me, Dalton Jeffries is more like pitches with an above-average fastball, but it's not a scintillating, totally swing-and-miss fastball. But he's got better command than Connor Jones. I think when he needs to make a pitch, I think Dalton Jeffries can make a pitch. How much do we worry about Oregon State off of this? Just getting swept is kind of surprising, but I still feel like overall top-to-bottom talent, Oregon State's the most talented team in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think the pitching is a slight concern coming off of this weekend. Rasmussen was dinged up, and he was really good for 3 innings, and then he ran into trouble, and they pulled him in the 4th. And then, I mean, the next 2 days, they weren't able to come up with that stopper that they needed to. But offensively, I think they're still really good. I mean, they have some youth there, but, I mean, Morrison and Ice are both juniors, and yeah, they can pick them up. And I think Oregon State will be fine. And frankly, the schedule is kind to them after this. So I think they'll bounce back and be okay. But, I mean, they do have – this was their biggest test, and they knew it going in. You know, Pat Casey was not shy about that when I talked to him this, you know, going into the series. And they did not ace this their test. So they've got some things to work out. But a little bit like Florida, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world that you get this – early in the season, so you find out what you are.
Last thing on the Pac-12, unless you guys wanted to bring something else up, I was going to bring up UCLA. Kind of a drastic measure, obviously, for us to drop them from 14 to all the way out. Mm-hmm. I don't even think we wanted to drop Clemson as far as we dropped Clemson. Were they 25 or
they out? They went from 17 to out.
And we didn't want to drop them all the way out either. We just had other teams we really wanted to bring in. But there wasn't really a big discussion about taking UCLA out, guys. I mean, I know we didn't like being that drastic, but 12-9 is 12-9. I mean, how does UCLA, I mean, Jimmer, how are they going to shape up for Shonerdology on Wednesday? I mean, this is not the way you script it if you're John Savage.
Yeah, well, the Pac-12 is going to be quite the Rubik's Cube for this week. when we were having the meeting last night, I was like, you know, from 14 to out is pretty harsh for losing 2 out of 3 on the road to a good team in Arizona, but 12-9, you just can't really get past that. Just to look at that and still be a top 25 team, we had teams we wanted to bring in, and they were just kind of you can justify taking them out for, you know, what they are. But I mean, yeah, I mean, the Bruins, I mean, they're still high enough in the RPI. They're 19 on Warren Nolan as we speak right now, and their strength of schedule is really good. But their next few, I mean, if they lose this Cal series, see, what would they be? They are 4-6. They are still probably be 500, say. See, if they lose 2 out of 3, they'd be 5-5.
And
midweeks, 5-4.
And they're midweeks.
Yeah, that's
no gimme. They're playing Fullerton this week, right?
Exactly. And they keep losing midweek games. That's why they're 12-9. They haven't, I don't think they've won one yet, have they? No, they have not.
They have not won a midweek game yet all year, and this is a team that is, theoretically, is built on pitching depth.
And they've given up a ton of runs on all these.
It's Hooper and Hunter Verrant, two left-handers who are supposed to be, you know, who are very, very well regarded, but just have not been able to do it.
Justin Hooper, 9 walks in 3 innings this year, and that is a big reason why he's given up 12 runs in 3 innings. So Kyle Molnar has been much better as a freshman, as expected. 3 years from now, give me Justin Hooper. But right now, it's not even close. That's why Molnar's in the weekend rotation, and Mr. Hooper is hanging in the midweek starts. Which is the better offense, Mike? And I mean this, this is faint praise. Better offense, Oregon, which lost another series this weekend, or UCLA? I mean, UCLA, what would UCLA do without Eric Filia?
Yeah.
They wouldn't have scored a run all year, it feels like.
The one thing I'll say is Sean Bouchard is hitting well for them now, which is much needed for them. And Court Peterson is doing better now, too. So those three guys are going to have to lean on those three guys quite a bit in their lineup. You know, I would give the edge to UCLA just looking at the raw numbers. I mean, UCLA has performed more. You know, I thought Oregon would be better offensively this year with what they had returned and with the freshmen that they were bringing in, but I don't think there's any way you could ever bank on the Oregon offense with what they've done this year. So I would give the edge to UCLA there.
No, and they lost.
Team.
Yeah. What's that?
Oregon hitting 211, 287th in the country.
Woof. Yeah. And they are. They lost a series at UW this weekend. I'll just throw in from NHSI, UW fans, there's hope for the future. It's watching Chaminade with their two University of Washington commits, Tommy Costello and was it Nick Cayley?
Yeah.
Nick Cale, I should say. I know his name is pronounced like Cale because I tweeted Cale, when he hit a home run. Those guys look legit. If those guys get to college, especially Cale, who's a offensive-minded catcher, sounds like his body from a pro standpoint, but not too – the one scout I just talked to just wasn't terribly pleased with his athleticism and where his body's gone, but thinks he'll be a really good college player.
You didn't even see the best of Washington's recruits for next year. They were they're in our top 25 recruiting rankings this fall for the first time in school history. And
Joe Demers.
Joe Demers and AJ Graffinino, a big part of that. And this year's class shaping up to be at least as good if they can hang on to guys like Ben Baird and those guys you were talking about at NHSI.
So in other words, you better get Washington now because I think they're going to get better.
And they've been good so far this year. I mean, they're 12-7 and. I mean, that's better than UCLA has been. So, and, you know, they've taken back-to-back series against Arizona and Oregon. Obviously, they'll have a big test this weekend at Oregon State. But, you know, we had them as a regional team in the preseason, and they do have some talent on that team. So, you know, with other Pac-12 teams struggling, maybe there's a window for them to possibly do something this year.
This is not exactly a surprise, but Lindsey Meggs, very good at his job.
Right. No, it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise that Washington's on the climb and finally, in the last couple of years, was it 2 years ago, got their ballpark situation.
Yeah, got to a regional that year, too.
And that's it. So they've, you know, it was a long slog for a program that, you know, don't forget, didn't go to regionals when they had Tim Lincecum as a junior when he had like one of these all-time years. So it's basically the only reason that Tim Lincecum wasn't our college player of the year. It was Andrew Miller that year.
Did they go once with Lincecum? Or?
Once. Yeah. I believe it was his sophomore season. Yeah. When he was eligible that year, that's one of those sliding doors. That's a universe somewhere, one of these multiverses where the Cleveland Indians are in the end of their dynasty, where Cliff Lee, CC Sabathia, and Tim Lincecum were all Indians at the same time, and they won multiple World Series. I know I'm killing you here, Teddy. Turn of the knife! Sorry, but and Tyler Naquin's in their big league roster. Oh, that's this universe. So that's a whole other discussion. It's a Baseball America College podcast. Guys, let's wrap up a little bit with some ACC talk. We mentioned it earlier with Zach Gallen and North Carolina taking a loss and North Carolina losing that series at home to Georgia Tech. The Ramblin' Wreck jumps back into our rankings this week. I'm stupid and I don't have it right in front of me. They are 23 in our rankings. But it was a pretty tumultuous weekend in the ACC. You had Miami sweeping Clemson. As we mentioned earlier, we didn't really want to drop Clemson all the way out, but they did get swept. We had to make room. This is what happens there. Louisville with a huge series win against Virginia. What was your biggest storyline from the ACC? Jim, I'll ask you first. What was your biggest storyline from the ACC this weekend? Because there are multiple.
Yeah, I would say... I'd say Louisville winning was a big one for me. And the other thing that jumped out for me that from that series, that when I was looking this up for top 25 trackers, Virginia is now 1-5 in Sunday games.
Huh.
Or third games of series, in one case, really. It's a Saturday game. But, yeah, so that's kind of, I mean, we talked about with, who was it, that keeps struggling on Fridays.
But, Kentucky.
Kentucky. So Virginia is, I mean, they're 1-5 in these third games. The only one they won was actually the East Carolina series, where they had already lost the series. So they're basically in rubber games. They haven't, I think this was actually their first rubber game, but anyway.
But they're struggling.
They've not been good in third games. That's kind of a little bit of a concern. Obviously we talked about Connor Jones, you know how good he is, but you know, their bullpen's been a little iffy at times. It's kind of cost them some games, and I mean, they still like their talent. It's obviously, we know how good Matt Theiss has been. So that's a little thing to keep an eye on. You know, we talked about Louisville, how they'd lost these two series, both on the road. Now they finally get somebody at home. So that's I think they kind of needed that one. Obviously Louisville's back up to 4 in our rankings this week. So I think that's kind of a big thing.
And Louisville's second in the league in ERA. Mike, Teddy,
they didn't lose another Funkhauser start though.
They did. And, There's that elephant in the room for me. But was there an ACC storyline that stood out to you? I mean, I'm kind of stunned that we have North Carolina at Miami this weekend.
Yeah,
that's for basically first place in the Coastal. I mean, Miami's been pretty tough at home. They had a series loss at home against Florida, but sweeping Clemson this weekend, that feels like not the recipe for North Carolina coming off a series home loss to have to go to Coral Gables the next weekend.
Yeah, you know, I know basically the entire Funky Fresh crew, except for me, was at Carolina this weekend. You know, it was impressive on one hand to see Georgia Tech pitch that well against Carolina. Right. And it's also, for me, I'm curious to see how that offense bounces back at Miami, because that's where we had a lot of our questions in the preseason, was with that lineup and
right.
whether they're going to be able to hit enough. So I'm curious to see, you know, after they struggle offensively, if they're able to rebound from that or if those struggles continue.
They're schizophrenic to me.
Yeah.
I mean, to have been shut out twice in an ACC play already by Pittsburgh and Georgia Tech. I mean, Zach Ryan was Georgia Tech's kind of moment of truth reliever last year. He had 7 saves. He had 9 wins. He'd thrown 6 1/3 innings all year, Teddy, and he was brilliant Saturday. I mean, he plowed through Carolina's lineup. Miami's a little schizophrenic offensively for me this year. I mean, you know, last year, was it Iskandarian? Led the ACC in hits? Mm-hmm. Was there a 3-holder? We're just so steady, and obviously a big loss. It seems like they're a little bit more streaky offensively this year, but certainly potent when they need to be.
Yeah, I think Miami's streakiness this year is attributable to the swing and miss in their best hitters' bats.
Right.
Zach Collins, Jacob Hayward, and Willie Abreu all are going to strike out. That's a thing that's going to happen.
And it feels like teams just are not going to let Zach Collins beat them. 25 walks already this year for Zach Collins. I mean,
very disciplined,
right?
He will swing and miss because he has a big swing and he hits home runs, and that's what power hitters do. But
right.
he is disciplined. Whereas Willy Abreu is not afraid to expand his strike zone.
This is correct.
But Michael Angeli came up with the big hit on Saturday night. And, I mean, if he's going to get going, that's big for them. And Chris Barr has been a steady, steady guy in the past. But neither one of those guys is his Kandarian. This is... And they are kind of missing that, it feels like.
It just feels like they're just less steady. Just like with this Kandarian last year, they could manufacture a run at any point. He was a great singles hitter. He stole bases efficiently. I guess the other part about Miami is that, you know, Woodry hasn't pitched great this year. And it just seems like it hasn't mattered. You know, things aren't going according to plan for the U, and yet they're still looking like the ACC. Right now, I think they're the ACC favorite. Because they've beaten, especially if they beat Carolina, they'll have beaten Louisville, and then they will have beaten North Carolina, the only team left out there. There's Virginia and there's Florida State. Those are the other two big challengers, but Miami would be sitting quite pretty if they win the series this weekend.
Yeah, and if you can get Woodry going, and I mean, I think there has to be faith that he will get going at some point, that they are quite tough. But I mean, the pitching is a slight concern, I guess, at this point with Woodry going through a little bit of scuffles and they're working some various things out there, but I think that's they're third in the country for a reason.
Right.
That's a really talented team, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with offensively. And if they can get the pitching going, that's a really complete team there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like their pitching as much as I like North Carolina's or Louisville when everyone's going right on that team. But yeah, I mean, obviously there's something to be said for them pushing the right buttons and getting the right guys out there. And, you know, they do an excellent job managing that bullpen is one thing Miami does very well. And I think talking about, you know, an Iskandarian type, I think Carl Chester has kind of been that for them in some ways. Had a nice weekend this weekend. He's been their leadoff hitter, batting .371 this year, .473 on base, not striking out a lot. So
right.
He's been a quality guy for them in the leadoff spot. But yeah, you do need more consistency.
Abreu and Hayward, like you said, they just haven't been consistently there in Miami's lineup. North Carolina's kind of similar, really, as far as the lineup goes. It's Miller, Pate, Ramirez. After that, there hasn't been a consistent guy in that lineup.
The other unbelievable thing about Miami is just how friendly the schedule is. Yes, they play all these good teams, but they all come to Miami. Florida went to Miami, and yes, Miami did lose that series, but Florida went to Miami, Louisville went to Miami, North Carolina's going to Miami, Clemson went to Miami, Virginia's going to Miami. All Miami has to do is go to Georgia Tech and Florida State. Like that is as manageable as it gets in the ACC for the top contenders.
Yeah, because the other road series are Notre Dame, Duke, like you said, and Georgia Tech.
And they went to Virginia Tech.
Right.
And not to belittle those teams there, but I mean, you would much rather go there than having to go to Chapel Hill or to Clemson, or you know.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, NC State's kind of the flip of that, right, Jim? I mean, they have to go to most of those teams and. I don't know,
yeah,
I think they kind of got off the hook a little bit this weekend. They
got
two games
bit.
Rained out of Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, Florida State just owns the Wolfpack. Really no way around
he
that.
He said ruefully.
So. Yeah, there's really no way around, another way to put that. So, you never know, but it might have been a good thing for them. They didn't have to play those two games.
Well, it doesn't get any easier for them, though, because
they have to go to Virginia now. And they do, I'm trying to see if I can pull up the rest of their schedule, but I know Carolina, North Carolina does come to Raleigh, but I think they have to go to Clemson.
They have one more tough road series for NC State.
Yeah.
I know that they were not happy. Just the contrast that you made, they made to me, their coaching staff made to me earlier this year, where it's like, it's just kind of how things worked out. But Miami gets all the tougher teams at home, and NC State gets most of those tougher teams on the road. Florida State being their toughest road series, and that's the other untold part of this, guys, is that Florida State, once again, leading the ACC in runs scored, even though they had two games washed out this weekend. It's every year. It's just so metronomic. They walk a lot. They always have a good approach. Some veteran guy comes out of, not nowhere, but John Sansone's having this kind of Sugar Shane Robinson-type season, or fill in your veteran Florida State blow-up year here. I'm old, so I go back to like John Ford Griffin blowing up or those kind of guys. My money would have been on Quincy Neipert to be that guy
that
to break out. That's one of my favorite names. But Florida State, guys, I mean, it just feels like that team's going to be there at the end, too. They have to go to Clemson, but their other ACC road series are at BC, at Wake Forest, at Duke. All things being equal, most ACC teams would take those as their road series. So feels like Miami and Florida State. It's like this is what the ACC wanted for football, you know, to have those two teams win those divisions and play every
never
year.
Happened.
It has never happened. It might happen in baseball this year. I would love it if the ACC tournament just did, here's a best of five series between the two divisions. That would be awesome. That would be very unique and would never happen, but it'd be awesome. What else from around the country, guys, jumped out to you guys? We did have a little shakeup in the Big 12. We had TCU lose a series against Texas this weekend. That dropped them. Oklahoma State's kind of creeping back up in our rankings, but does it feel like otherwise there was a loud statement series? I guess the one we talked about a little bit last week, Long Beach State, keeps on keeping on. Look a little bit more for real. They beat Fulton.
Looking forward to that little series with UCSB and the Dirtbags this weekend.
17 and 18. So this weekend's schedule basically is bounce, right?
It's fantastic. Yeah. Also from this last weekend, Ryan Hingst, Arizona State, threw a no-hitter. That was the 10th in Arizona State program history. So that was obviously a great accomplishment for him, and that's the Sun Devils' only Pac-12 win to this point. So he's been fantastic. The Sun Devils have some things to figure out, like we mentioned. But Hingst was very good on against Utah in his start.
You know, for me, you mentioned Oklahoma State. They didn't have necessarily a loud weekend, but I think you look at their last few weeks and coming back from a 2-5 start, they're now
they just keep on keeping on.
Yeah, they're now 17-7, and you know, you could tell, you know, seeing them early in the year against UNC, they got swept, but there are a lot of things to like about that team, and they were in every game. You know, they lost three walk-offs, and you see this weekend the final game went 10 innings and they won that. You know, they're starting to get that situational hitting. They're closing out games, and you know, they're a dangerous club. They're a team that was in our preseason top 10.
Right.
And, you know, not necessarily, you know, as prospect heavy as some of the other top teams in the country, but they're a gritty veteran club, and I think they're a team to look out for and a team that could keep rising.
Another thing I meant to ask you guys about, so the surprise to me, I guess it shouldn't be a huge surprise, but weren't you guys stunned that Missouri State lost the home series to Minnesota? I mean, they were, what, like 18-2 before? We discussed ranking them. We'd held off because they had not played anybody. But in their kind of Big Ten invitational the last couple of weeks, Iowa and Minnesota at home, they were unable to be the offensive juggernaut they had been before against Minnesota. I mean, is Minnesota that good on the mound, or is that just more a case of Missouri State not being able to live up to the competition level, rose a bit?
Frankly, I was not surprised. Missouri State, as I've said many times to Missouri State fans in the last 2 weeks, had played a very soft schedule and had lost to the good teams that they played on it. They got beat by Anthony Kay, and they lost to Oklahoma State. And sweeping Iowa now looks better because Iowa beat Maryland in a series, which I was very surprised by. But Minnesota is off to a surprisingly good start. I mean, the Golden Gophers were not a team that I was expecting to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten, but they're now 12-9, and that's almost all away from home. They played one home game. It was a midweek this week, and you know they're doing a good job at the plate. They're hitting .331 as a team. They're pitching. You know, John Anderson might have a nice little team there. I mean, we'll see as they get into Big Ten play exactly what they are. But Missouri State, I mean, they will bounce back from that, but they were going to lose the series eventually. And that Minnesota was the one to do it, with the way the Golden Gophers have been playing, I was not particularly surprised.
Certainly good for the Big Ten. I watched a little Big Ten baseball on the Big Ten Network this weekend. I saw some Northwestern Ohio State yesterday on Sunday. I was very impressed by Northwestern's uniforms. I also watched a little bit of the end of Illinois' game, I believe, when they lost to Penn State on Saturday. I guess the big story at the top of this league right now is Michigan State. We ranked them 2 weeks ago. They swept Rutgers this weekend. They're 18-3. And kind of I guess the problem for Michigan State is this is supposed to be like a big show-out series this weekend with Oregon coming to play them, and Oregon struggling so much. So you know, if you lose that series, they'll definitely will be mocked for losing to Oregon. And if they win this year, it's like, Oregon's down this year. You kind of can't win for winning this weekend, right?
Yeah, that is a little unfortunate for them. But, you know, I think they're just going to keep approaching it the same way they always approach. You know, that's a team that's not going to get too high. It's not going to get too low. Jake Boss, that's the way he is, and his teams seem to really take that on. So I think that it would have been very exciting for them to bring Oregon in if Oregon had been, was playing as well as they could be. But, we'll see what they got this weekend, and then they'll get back into Big Ten play. And, it's exciting for the Big Ten that Michigan State is taking a step forward. That's a team that's kind of been on the cusp
right.
the last few years. And so if they can take a step forward and challenge some of the top teams in the conference, for the regular season title, I think that only makes the Big Ten stronger long-term.
Jim, I'm telling you, for show nerdology, the Big Ten is going to be dicey this week because you have, five teams in the top 50 with Michigan State, Nebraska, Michigan, which is ranked. Minnesota now really jumps up the rankings. So I guess it's four top 50 teams. Could that be a four-bid league, Big Ten? In the preseason, I think we had it as a three-bid league, right?
Yeah, it was three. IU, Michigan, and Maryland.
Maryland's the team kind of in the danger zone right now.
Yeah, I did not see that one coming, losing to Iowa.
I would imagine you didn't. Because they got the loss of Schwarren on the mound on Friday. Yeah, got the loss there too.
And Schwarren has not five been, innings. He's not been Schwarren this year.
No, he is not.
The other thing I was just, when we were talking about Missouri State, just looking at the valley is not looking too hot right now.
That's looking like a one-bid league.
That is looking like they had a three-bid league last year, kind of a banner year, but
DBU had a tough weekend against Baylor.
They lost to Baylor, which it's not good for anybody in the valley.
It's good for Steve Rodriguez, but not good for anybody in the valley sure.
That's looking more like a one-bid league this year. The Big Ten though, that could definitely be three or four. It probably won't be the teams we thought it would be, as we're thinking, because IU's been struggling, and the Terps have been a bit of a mystery this spring. But Nebraska being strong has kind of snuck up on me. But they're top 50 in the RPI. We know the Spartans are good. Michigan, one of these other teams can kind of hang in there in one of the top half of the league. Then that could definitely be up there. A four bid type year.
Yeah, Nebraska a little bit quietly has really gone on a nice roll here. And
because they lost their first two weekends to Charleston and Long Beach, or two of their first three.
Yeah.
Those are good quality series, but you'd like to at least have won one of those.
Yeah, and but now they play a tough schedule, and they're Darren Erstad is not afraid to play anyone anywhere.
Right.
And they're winning some games, and it's showing in RPI.
Right,
and
it's out there 47 right now.
Yeah, nice. And they're where they need to be as conference play is starting, and Creighton. Speaking of Nebraska, Creighton's off to a nice start too.
And they play Tuesday.
They play Tuesday, and Creighton since getting swept at Fresno State on opening weekend, I believe has only lost one game. I think they're 16-1 since opening weekend.
Last thing, and I'll let you guys go. We ranked the Conference USA team this weekend. It's Florida Atlantic, and I think mostly it's because Florida Atlantic has played they haven't played a lot of great teams, but they did open the year with those two wins of Mississippi State. We almost ranked them that weekend. Wound up not. They've kept on winning enough since then. 18-4 now, 5-1 in Conference USA. But there's a couple other teams. Conference USA actually, from an RPI standpoint, looks really strong. And Rice and Southern Miss are off to great starts. And Rice especially bouncing back.
They're figuring it out, figuring things out.
They're off to a great start in conference play. How for real do we think Rice is? It's UT, San Antonio, and Old Dominion, but they only gave up five runs to ODU this weekend.
Old Dominion had been really good.
Right. Yeah. That's loud to me that they swept that series and how well they pitched. That starts to feel like an old school Rice team.
Yeah, when I saw Rice in Houston, they were playing what I assume is going to be the worst baseball they play all year.
Let's hope so for their sake.
But the pieces are there. You have Duplantier on Friday nights. You have a good pitching staff, as Rice tends to do, and Ford Proctor at shortstop is a nice freshman, and they have other offensive pieces, and so it's Rice. That's who you always think is going to win that league, basically. And,
right.
They've earned that, and they started slowly. They lost to a series to Arizona on opening weekend, and then they lost three games in the Houston College Classic. But you always knew they had the talent to figure it out, and now they are, and they're I think they are again going to be challengers in that conference.
Mike, what put FAU over the top for you in terms of us ranking the Owls? I guess I would make some kind of reference to Dumb and Dumber, but I can't do it. All I remember is he said, "Nice Hooters, the Owls, they're beautiful."
I think it's just that they continue to take care of business. You know, I mean, that there's someone I think every week that we've talked about possibly putting in the top 25, I think for 3 or maybe 4 weeks now.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that, I mean, they're 18-4, you know, that's loud, and, you know, had a nice, you know, clean sweep of UAB this weekend and, you know, pitched well and scored enough. And, you know, it seems like a team that has a lot of balance on both sides of the ball and, you know, an excellent coaching staff there. And, you know, a team that made some noise last year, too. So, you know, there's a lot to like with that group. And, you know, I think it was just kind of a long time coming for them.
It feels like there's not a star on that team necessarily, but there's the lineup top to bottom. They're hitting 300 as a team. I was texting with a coach who's played them this year about that. No, he didn't think he would single anybody out, but he thought their starting pitching was solid. Their bullpen is outstanding, deep. You know, there's not a one necessarily, there's not like an Austin Gomber on this team, like a big prospect that they've had in some past years. But this is a dangerous team. I don't know if it's as good as their 2013 team. That team was explosive offensively. This team seems like it's a good team, not necessarily an explosive team, but once again, FAU's going to be good. Rice, I think you've talked to Coach Barry at Southern Miss. How for real is Southern Miss, Teddy?
Well, Southern Miss had a tough weekend.
I think it was 2 weeks ago.
That was 2 weeks ago now. No, Southern Miss is doing fine. Southern Miss, they are really high in RPI. They have played a pretty solid schedule. They swept San Antonio this weekend. They won a series at Marshall. They won a series at Samford. That's non-conference, but they won a series at Samford.
Sounds like you were talking to go see them even this weekend at Charlotte in conference.
Yeah, I mean that is a possibility. That's a good looking team there. That's another tough team in this conference, and the whole thing stacks up pretty well. I mean, FAU, Rice, Southern Miss, Western Kentucky got off to a pretty decent start, as did Old Dominion. I mean, it's a good collection, and a lot of the good baseball schools in that conference had been taken by the Big
right.
East, now American.
Right.
But there's still good baseball schools in this conference.
And just RPI-wise, the RPI likes Conference USA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure why, but it clearly likes that. You said Old Dominion had been off to a great start. Western Kentucky has a robust RPI. And I know one of the reasons that's not going to go anywhere for Southern Miss, they have all these midweek games coming up with Mississippi State, Ole Miss. So Southern Miss is going to, especially if they can win some of those midweek games against those SEC teams, that's only going to help. This feels like this could be a big year for Conference USA in terms of at-large bids, Jim. It feels like
for sure.
Be a deeper season. But like you said, Teddy, for me, you pick Rice until they don't win it. They've won a conference regular season or tournament. It's every year since 1996. That's still intact.
20 years. Yeah, exactly 20 years now.
The best college baseball poster of all time, and it will never be topped, was the one with Wayne Graham with his scraggly old late 70s fingers. Now I think he's 80 years old.
Yes.
That poster from a couple of years ago where he had all the rings on it, and those hands have thrown a ton of batting practice pitches. But that's what the guy used to do with the Astros back in the day, was throw BP. And he's thrown a lot of BP at San Jack. He threw it for the Astros. He's thrown it at Rice. I don't think he throws BP anymore. I don't think he's thrown BP for a while. I could be wrong.
I would imagine not. But they didn't take BP on the field in Houston, so I didn't see it there.
I'd love to see Wayne throw BP right now. maybe he still does. Forgive my ignorance on Wayne Graham's batting practice throwing prowess, but that was his shtick. So when he had those scraggly old hands with like 25 rings stuck on them from regular season conference tournaments, regionals, national championship in 2003. I'm sure he had some from his Sanjak days. That's a great poster. And that's kind of the image I think is in everyone's heads in Conference USA every year because Rice remains the team to beat. So good stuff, everybody. Nice podcast. We should probably wrap this up since we're close to an hour. We want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you for your SeatGeek download. Remember that BA20 promo code So for Mike, Jim, and Teddy, I'm John. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast.
This concludes our program. Visit baseballamerica.com for more podcasts. Today's Baseball America Podcast was sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America Podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20.